Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, 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 one and all, to the Tuesday, 6th day of March, 2008 edition of Head On. I am Bob Kincaid. Everybody knows that, except folks new to the program. And if you are new to the program, hope you'll make yourself at home, make yourself comfortable, and share your thoughts, share your ideas. Of course, that applies to everybody. If you've never been to the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com chat room, jump right in. Like everything else offered here at the Horn, it doesn't come with a bill. We are strictly voluntarily supported by you who understand what we're trying to do by creating true conversation radio and reinventing and reinvigorating the American dialogue. Busy day today. Voting's still going on in North Carolina and Indiana. And for those of you keeping score at home, this ain't going to change anything. By that I mean there's not going to be any sort of determination as to who the Democratic nominee is. We just have to wait for a few more months to find out who is going to be the person who is actually light years better than the McCain-Churian McCain did it. Who, by the way, may be slipping a bit. Did you see this? He was, and of course, you know, since we broadcast from the hills and hollers of wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia, this sort of resonated with me a little bit. The McCain-Churian McCain-Didit went off to, North Carolina today. He was at Wake Forest University, there in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Kind of hard to not get that whole hyphenated thing, Winston-Salem, North Carolina. North Carolina. And he was giving a speech on his judicial philosophy. I realize that when a Republican talks about judicial philosophy, that we're talking about a contradiction in terms, an oxymoron, if you will, and no, for once, that word does not refer to Flush Flimball. But, in this speech on his judicial philosophy, which is a shorthand term for how I'm going to continue screwing working people and trying to keep them out of the courtroom, John slipped a little bit. Just not entirely home. He said, and he's reading from a text, okay? This is what I'm getting at. This is not off-the-cuff ad liberandum, if you will. He said he wanted to thank, and I quote, the students and faculty of Wake Forest University. But then, as he went on into the speech, he had what those of you who love the film Spinal Tap will recognize as a "Hello, Cleveland!" moment. He looked around for a minute and got that sort of cow looking at a new gate the look on his face. You know, sort of the Ronald Reagan, Nancy, where am I, sort of thing.
Well, I don't really know where I am. Oh, dear.
And the McCain-Churian candidate said, I appreciate the hospitality of the students and faculty of West Virginia. I mean, I understand Freudian slips. If he had been at, say, Virginia Tech, which is in Western Virginia, you might make that little sort of gaffe. If he had been, you know, at Radford or something like that. Or if he had been at the University of Western Ohio, if there is one. But he was at Wake Forest University in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. That would be Winston-Salem, North Carolina. I appreciate the hospitality of the students and faculty of West Virginia. That's bad enough. But then there was also what went with it. Namely, well, the discussion of his judicial philosophy, which, you know, that still just makes the little the hairs on the back of my neck kind of go. Well, judge it for yourself.
But real activism in our country is democratic. Real activists seek to make their case democratically, to win hearts, minds, and majorities to their cause. Such people throughout our history have often shown great idealism and done great good. By contrast, activist lawyers and activist judges follow a different method. They want to be spared the inconvenience of campaigns, elections, legislative votes, and all of that. They don't seek to win debates on the merits of their argument. They seek to shut down debates by order of the court. And even in courtrooms, they apply a double standard. Some federal judges operate by fiat, shrugging off generations of legal wisdom and precedent.
Other federal judges operate on a Renault. Some in perhaps in a Citroen or an Audi. By fiat? Oh, please. John McCain is completely out of his depth. But you know what this is. This is that interminable business about activist judges.
While expecting their own opinions to go unquestioned, only their favorite precedents are considered, quote, settled law.
Settled law. Really. Not retrievered law or spaniel law, but settled law. No wonder he was doing the whole Hello Cleveland thing. Campaign trails getting to the McCain-Churian candidate just a little bit, don't you think? Settled law.
And everything else is fair game. The sum effect of these capricious rulings have been to spread confusion.
Remind me to talk about capricious rulings in a minute, okay?
Instead of clarity in our vital national debates, to leave resentment instead of resolution, and to turn Senate confirmation hearings into a gauntlet of abuse.
To turn Senate confirmation hearings into a gauntlet of abuse. What you talking about, Willis? A gauntlet of abuse? You mean when you actually, when some members of the Senate actually find the spine to ask questions about judicial nominees who do things like okay the strip search of a 9-year-old girl who's not charged with anything and has nothing to do with the crime under investigation? You mean that? Oh, that's a gauntlet of abuse. Or trying to find out what's at the heart of a judicial nominee who passes and gives approval to policemen who shoot young black men fleeing from them who are unarmed, shoot them in the back of the head. Yeah, gauntlet of abuse. That's what it is. Gauntlet of abuse. I'm guessing the McCain-Turian McCain-didit is having real memory problems. What's that drug they give for Alzheimer's? Maybe it's time for John to take some. Because I'm sure he can't be bothered to remember the vast, vast number, far larger than any held up by any Democrats in the Senate of Bush appointees, the vast number of appointees held up by his own filthy party during the Clinton years. Nope, selective memory is kicking in on poor old Bomber John.
Over the years, we have all seen the dreary results that now pass for advice and...
Press now pass? John, I think you're past even Wilford Brimley helping you, buddy. I mean, I talk for a living. What passes for a living? 3 hours a night, well, four really when you count the horn section. And God knows I have gotten my tongue wrapped around my tonsils any number of times. And that is to be expected. But we've got settered and prast not no past in the space of, what, 60 seconds? In addition to the Hello Cleveland moment. You tell me. Is this guy capable of being president of the United States? For those of you who despise Hillary Clinton, is there any doubt in your mind that she's going to be a little sharper at 3 o'clock in the morning than this creep is? For those of you who hate Barack Obama, is there any doubt in your mind that he's going to be a bunch sharper at 3 o'clock in the morning, since that is the benchmark time standard, than this guy will ever be?
Consent in the confirmation of nominees to our Supreme Court. We've seen and heard the shabby treatment accorded to nominees, the caricature in code words shouted or whispered, the 20-minute questions and the 2-minute answers. We've seen disagreements redefined as disqualifications, and the least infraction of approved doctrine pounced upon by senators and their staffs and their allies in the media.
Allies in the media? He must be talking about Republicans then, because Democrats don't have any allies in the media. How many damn days is it now that we have known that the Pentagon was dummying up the retired generals and field marshals and exalted 32nd degree noble Turks that it sent out to serve as nonpartisan experts to describe the military situation on the ground in Iraq? How many days? And yes, that is the same number of days that none of the outlets that use these phonied up, faked up, rubed up, ginned up, dummied up so-called experts have said not a blessed word about it. Huh? Their allies in the media? Now, bear in mind, if some right-wing punk thug Repiglican senator wants to get his talking points out, there's a camera with a little blinking red light just a-waiting on him. Democrats? Just watching.
Always hanging in the air over these tense confirmation battles is the suspicion that maybe, just maybe, a nominee for the court will dare to be faithful to the clear intentions of the framers and do the actual meaning of the Constitution. I will look for accomplished men and women with a proven record of excellence in the law and a proven commitment to judicial restraint.
and a proven track record of right-wing reactionaryism. Because that is the litmus test for a repig-licking nominee to the Supreme Court of the United States. It goes without saying that you can't be a Democrat and be a federal judge with a repig-licking in the Oval Office. Now, I remember during the Clinton administration that Bill Clinton appointed some repig-licking federal judges. But George Bush appoint any Democrats? Thanks for playing. What a disgusting display this is. Sorry, that's when the applause sign went on.
I will look for people in the cast of John Roberts, Samuel Alito, and my friend, the late William Rehnquist.
There! It's plain now! You want to hate on Hillary? Hate on Hillary. You want to hate on Obama? Hate on Obama. But you know what? He just told you. He just told you! I will find me another Sam Alito. I will find me another John Roberts. I will find me another Clarence Thomas. I will find me another fat Tony Scalia whipping himself in religious ecstasy. I'm going to find me those judges, and I'm going to pack that court. And I'm going to make you like it. And the wimpy little Democrats in the Senate had better, by God, confirm them, or I'll wear them out in the media. Because I'm John McCain, and I get a free pass from the media. I'm John McCain. I'm the thin-haired, fair-haired, darling little boy of the media. And I'm Teflon now, and I'll be Teflon when I'm in the White House. You think Alito's conservative? You think Roberts is conservative? Baby, you ain't seen conservative until you see the knuckle-walking freak that I put on the court. Is that enough for you? See, I gotta admit, I'm not in love with Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton. I don't have a poster on my wall, all right? I don't walk around talking about change or hope or my particular personal opinion of Imperial Canadian blended whiskey or guns or elitism or any of that. Hell, I'm a hillbilly elitist, you know. But Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton are both miles ahead of this antediluvian retrograde freak who spent his youth crashing 5 aircraft. Hell, you know, George Bush's daddy only crashed a couple. John McCain's got him licked a mile. George couldn't even show up for flight training because he was a little too coked up, couldn't pass the physical. John McCain crashed 5 aircraft. Ooh, there's some competence for you. And this guy, you're willing to even remotely create the likelihood of this guy getting in the Oval Office because you don't like Obama or you don't like Hillary? I have 5 damned good reasons for voting for whoever the Democratic nominee is. And they are all under the age of 15. Because you see, the freak or freaks that John McCain puts on the Supreme Court will be screwing up those people's lives long after I, baby, am worm food. You get it? Is the light going on? I'm not talking down to anybody. I honest to God, want to know that we're finally beginning to comprehend the stakes in this contest. God bless Guy James, who says, you know, don't sweat it, don't sweat it. When the time comes, we will kick John McCain's ass all over this country. And I need a little bit of Guy's optimism once in a while. I need a kick in the pants, you know, and that's what I get from Guy. Because he is a hardcore believer in the ultimate common sense of the American people in a ballot box, in a voting booth, at a ballot box. And I need a little dose of that once in a while. I sincerely do. Because when I see John McCain telling you that he is already out there looking for another Samuel Alito, I get cold chills down my spine. I mean, I get the little drops of sweat that form at the back of your hairline and run dribbling down your back and stop in the small of it and sort of make you cringe all over when I think of John the McCain-Churian McCain did it on January the 20th, 2009, putting his hand on some Bible and saying, so help me God, I'll protect and defend the Constitution of the United States so long as it doesn't annoy my corporate owners. But that's me. I have nightmares about it. I have a very, very active dream life. I fall asleep and my overactive id or subconscious or what the hell ever is driving the bus when my eyelids are closed and my eyeballs are going back and forth like brrrr. I get that some nights when I'm nice and relaxed, I get little mind movies all night long in living color that are just fun, and I wake up and I go, hell, I couldn't have got that paying $10 at the movie theater. But other nights I sit bolt upright because I've just had a dream of President McCain. And I got to walk around the house for a little bit or come back here into the studio and just sort of scratch my head and sit for a little bit so the nightmare won't come back when I close my eyes again. Really? Oh, those judges that McCain's talking about that make strict constructionist decisions as opposed to judges operating their Fiat or John Deere or Hollis Chalmers or whatever it is they're operating. They are voting, in fact, in North Carolina and Indiana today. And in South Bend, Indiana, well, if you haven't been paying attention, there's a pretty hefty Roman Catholic community in South Bend. They've got this little school there. You know, the one that plays football and could be like 3-12, and there would be people in the United States voting them number one in the national polls. You know, Notre Dame. Three and 12? No. 3-9. 3-12 is too much to hope for. There's a significant Roman Catholic community there. There's even a nunnery. You know, get thee to a nunnery, go. And that nunnery, being like most convents in the United States, has a lot more older nuns than younger ones. And you know, of course, that Indiana is the state that recently had the voter ID law held up by those that fat freak Scalia and his buddy Alito and his buddy Roberts and his buddy Thomas that said that old people who have never had to drive a car nor never needed a driver's license can be compelled to get some sort of photo ID in order to be able to cast the vote and exercise the franchise that their generation fought, bled, and died to preserve. About 12 nuns there in Indiana got turned away from a polling place by their fellow sister because they didn't have a state or federal photo ID. We're talking about St. Mary's Convent in South Bend, Indiana, right across the street from the place that has the touchdown Jesus and the gold dome. Turned away a 98-year-old nun. Not a single one of the dozen nuns operates a motor vehicle. Some of them showed up with outdated passports in an attempt to exercise their franchise. 98 years old? Good God, she was a child when the right to vote was finally won for women in this country. And she has lived long enough, yea, verily, to see it given and to see it taken away. Holy cow. They weren't given provisional ballots because it would be impossible to get them to a motor vehicle branch and back in the 10-day time frame allotted by the law. Sister Julie McGuire said. Sister Julie McGuire, of course, is the one who turned them away and told them they could not, in the name of God, vote because their papers were not in order. You have to remember, she said, that some of these ladies don't walk well. They're in wheelchairs or on walkers or electric carts. There is no indication whatsoever that any one of these nuns was trying to perpetrate what the Supreme Court speciously noted was the purpose of this hateful Indiana statute, to wit, voter fraud. But they were disenfranchised just the same. Now, we know, for instance, that Fat Tony Scalia and four other members of the Supreme Court are Roman Catholic. But Fat Tony Scalia, in particular, is a member of Opus Dei that thinks women are dung. Opus Dei, whose founder, who was made a saint by John Paul II, way to go, JP! Hitler could not possibly have killed 6 million. At most, it was 4 million Jews. He's a member of that order. A lay member of that order, Fat Tony Scalia is. They like to whip themselves and beat themselves and wear little barbed wire bracelets around their thighs so they can bleed like Jesus. And he, by his actions, took the vote away from women that his own faith declares to be brides of Christ. How's that working out for you, Fat Tony? I think that's going to take some extra candles while you're sitting there getting the fat toasted off your ass in purgatory, old boy. There's going to be some penance, baby. And you know how it goes in purgatory. I mean, all kinds of nasty stuff. Democracy in action. And John McCain has told you to your face that he wants more judges who will do more evil crap like that to people who, at the age of 98, cherish their right to vote as much or more as they do their next breath. If I didn't have a little bit more, just the tiniest bit less restraint than what I've got, I'd be dropping F-bombs all over the place because, you know, I despise seeing old folks get crapped on by the likes of Fat Tony Scalia and the repig-licking party that he serves and that he confuses for Almighty God. But I'm just crazy that way. Let's go to the phones. Or not. So, you know, that's the first voter story of the evening. Now, bear in mind, our good buddy Brad Friedman has said that something like a million names have already been removed from the voter rolls. Yeah, I'm sorry. I understated. 1.1 million names were purged from Indiana voter registration rolls. Brad writes, in addition to the recent outrageously bad decision by the Supreme Court to approve Indiana's draconian polling place photo ID restrictions, sure to keep thousands of legal voters from even being able to cast a vote in tomorrow's, because he wrote this yesterday, important primary election, despite the state's inability to offer up a single instance of in-person polling place voter impersonation that's ever occurred during the state's entire history, another 1.1 million voters have now been purged from the voting rolls altogether. What's more, the state is using touchscreen voting machines across the state. Some of those machines, one in particular made by MicroVote, has been decertified. They're going to vote on them anyway. Several universities have proven that the ES&S and Diebold machines have been found vulnerable to undetectable vote-flipping viruses. Yeah, Lordy. Can you imagine? Can you imagine a veteran of the Second World War who no longer drives being denied his right to vote by the actions of those people that John McCain thinks are upstanding judicial strict constructionists? Have you noticed you have to hiss like a snake to say strict constructionists? Oh, I'm informed by our pal Marty that all five of the Roman Catholics on the Supreme Court of the United States are Opus Dei. All five of them are into the little barbed wire thing and the whips and the bleeding for Jesus and all of that freaky stuff. All five of them hold women in the lowest regard. Just need one more we can really count on. And we can pull the Repig-Licking Party can pull down 150 years of social progress in this country. Roe v. Wade, Griswold versus Connecticut, they've already started on Brown versus Board of Education. What comes next? A ringing endorsement of the Dred Scott decision? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Our buddy David in South Carolina says, I have it from a pretty good source that this is one election the Dems are not going to sit around and play defense. There are some great plans in the works to swift boat McNutt. I know we're supposed to be above this, but this plan is in the works as I type. Some of them have to do with his spiritual advisors. Trust me, you're going to love this. Ooh, I want you to be right, David. Because seeing the McCain jury and McCain did it get a pass on the crazies that he runs around with from the religion industry is driving me a little bit maddy. But you'll have that from time to time, especially from the likes of me, who, you know, I take this stuff far too seriously. I need to take a walk. From time to time, I've heard our buddy and hero Mike Malloy talk about, you know, earlier in the day, he goes and gets a swim. That's sounding like a better and better idea, and I can't wait till the county 4-H grounds open their swimming pool sometime around the middle of June. Used to be swimming pools opened on Memorial Day, but not around here, not when the county budget's been slashed to near nothing. And you can have a county financial crisis just trying to fill up a couple of damn swimming pools. Oy. But going and having a little swim, I kind of like that a lot. So that's where we begin this evening. We, God knows, are off to a roaring start. What about your thoughts? What about where you are with all of this? You want to share it? Don't be shy. We've never lost a caller yet. So we'll take a little break. We'll come back. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, toll free. 304-658-3333 if you've got your own unlimited long-distance dialing plan. You want to save us a buck or two. That's fine, too. Email rolls into Bob at headonradio.com. Learn it, know it, use it. We'll be back. This is The Horn.
Friday. Talking Heads, City of Dreams. I love the Talking Heads. Tell you what, we're going to the phones right quick, but I just want to share something that just rolled in. Again, our buddy Brad Friedman over at bradblog.com reporting a couple of highly disturbing things. First of all, the whole nun incident in Indiana began with a first-time voter, 18 years of age, at St. Mary's College in South Bend, thrilled to be voting in her first presidential election. All she had was a private college ID, and that ain't good enough to let you vote in Indiana. And it was after dealing with that problem that the poll worker nun realized she was going to have to disenfranchise some nonagenarian members of her order. Weep for democracy. And then do something about it. Lord God. Yeah, let's make sure those 18-year-olds don't get excited about the political process and actually want to participate in or nothing. Over in North Carolina, Brad reports that that 12 of the first 15 voters at a North Carolina precinct weren't found on the poll books. The Granville County names were said to be missing from the rolls after the 911 system failed to correlate voter addresses. I can smell that coming at me from a mile away, because, see, we recently got readdressed by our 911 system. Agnes and I were out this morning, and she said, "You reckon we'll actually be able to vote? Because, you know, we didn't change our addresses with the Board of Elections after 911 got done with us." I said, "They know us by name. They know our faces. Surely to God." And then I said, "I'm sorry, I shouldn't call you Shirley. And no, there's no guarantee that we're going to vote." And of course, if you vote in a precinct that has any form of electronic voting, there's no guarantee that even if you think you're voting, that you are. Oh, what a way to run a railroad. Our buddy Ed is on the line with us. Hey, Ed, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
How are you?
Doing pretty good. I like your program so far. I just thought I'd call in and make a few comments politically. Number one, Hillary is 60% and Obama's 40, and there's, I think, 39,000 or just over 39,000 votes been cast in Indiana. And I don't know what section, whether it's the African-American section coming in or, but I understand that she's only getting 8% of the black vote. So, and I don't know, they apparently got some of the black vote in anyway. But, I wanted to tell you on Obama, what really worried me the rest of the way out with him, where he's not got a chance of getting my vote, is I agree, I don't agree with McCain or Hillary on very many things, but when they talked about a temporary tax reduction on the gas, I am for that for the people that drive these 60 and 80 mile trips round trip or even one way, and he comes up with this stuff that's a temporary fix. You know, if I'm hungry today and I'm starving, I'll take that temporary fix. I despise that kind of analysis, today the people are hurting. It ain't 4 months down the road. They may come up with something to give a little relief by then. But right now, these people that's driving all these distance, and one is my wife, drives, 44 miles a day, and we've got a very economical car, but still yet, that relief that much would help.
Well, let's take a long look at this, Ed.
Okay.
Let's just use the car that you've referenced as our benchmark. How many gallons does that tank hold?
I don't know, Bob. Probably 18, I figure.
Okay. The federal fuel tax is 18.9 cents. So 10 times 18 is a buck 80 that you'd save on a fill up.
Mm-hmm.
3 bucks. $3.25. Let's be generous. $3.50 is the savings on a fill up. How many times do you fill it up a week?
Probably 2 to 3, just depends.
Okay, so at that point we're looking at $10 a week.
Mm-hmm.
Now you drive in West Virginia, so as a consequence of that, you know what the roads are like, you know what coal trucks do to our pavement. And you know what the federal tax, the gas tax goes to keep up the roads.
Supposedly, I don't see much them doing much, but the potholes that they fix, you're still afraid to hit them.
Oh golly, yeah. I don't want you to think I'm completely being disagreeable, because I'm not, but those tax dollars disappearing from the federal budget means that our roads go even more to hell than they already are.
Well,
now after 8 years of the Bush administration, among other things, in the state of Indiana, for instance, the state of Indiana sold a turnpike to some private Australian corporation, if you recall.
Mm-hmm.
It's going from bad to worse. Now, on the other hand of this, let me say that I hate the gas tax because it is regressive. I hate all regressive taxes. And by regressive taxes, I mean any tax, whether it's a food tax or a gas tax or a liquor tax or a beer tax or a cigarette tax. All of those things hit poor people harder than they hit the rich, because all of those taxes represent a higher percentage of disposable income for poor folks than it does for the rich.
Well, I'm looking at it from a standpoint, if we're going to bust down on taxes, get the oil companies and the windfall profits that they've made. And, you know, you hear people argue in favor of the oil companies. The oil companies are not building any more refineries. What are they doing with that kind of money, with that kind of billions of dollars? And let them pay the taxes that where the people can get a break.
But they won't.
Bob, I know guys ought not to drive these big gas hogs, but they bought them when gas was just a couple bucks a gallon, and they've still got them, and they're driving them, you know, to the coal mines and so forth, and that's eating them alive.
It is.
It is,
but I don't think 18 cents a gallon is going to pull them out of the hole that they're in.
Well,
it's a little bit, you know, I mean, $10 a week, $20 a week, that's 5 gallons of milk at $4 a gallon for somebody feeding a family. I get that. I really do get it.
It's a penny, Bob. I don't have a penny for the oil companies.
I don't either.
Pay for them.
I don't either. But consider what's going to happen, because we do know who runs the show, right?
Yep.
The politicians don't, and God knows you and I don't. Oil companies do.
Yeah.
So here's your.
Well, what are we getting out of them? The highways and the bridges and stuff are still falling apart.
Sure they are. Sure they are. But consider what's going to happen. I don't know what it is over where you are, but I'm paying right now about $3.75 a gallon for gasoline.
That's what it is here, and it went up another record-breaking thing today, over 120.
So let's say that just for the sake of argument, we'll round it to 20 cents. Let's say that the federal gas tax, and it's a holiday, it's not permanent, mind you, it's only so that you can go, so that people can go out on vacation in the summer.
I understand.
That's who this is aimed at.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's, let's call it 20 cents a gallon. And let's say that by, well, what do you reckon it'll be by, say, July the 4th? A lot of people travel on 4th of July. You reckon it'll be up to $4 a gallon by then?
No doubt. You
okay, so let's say that it drops back to, and bear in mind, none of this is going to happen because neither McCain nor Hillary are going to be president on the 4th of July.
I realize that.
Neither one of them are going to be president until January 20th, 2009. Or Obama, for that matter. So, really, this is a dodge. This is a scam. This is a shell game that Clinton and McCain are playing with the American people. And it's kind of cruel, and it's really elitist and cynical to do it to people because they sit there and they think that it might happen when it ain't gonna.
No, and I agree with that. But at least, it's, like I said, I use the example, if I'm hungry and starving, long term, don't bother me. I need something to eat today.
Right. You need bread in your belly now.
Yeah.
And I get that. And that's what sort of gets under my skin about all of this, because neither one of those people can do a blessed thing to make it happen.
No, I and I'm in agreement, but I agree with theory. Anyway.
But let's back up and do our little scenario real quick. Let's say gas on the 4th of July or July 1st. Gas on the on July the 1st is $4 a gallon. And let's say that this gas tax holiday goes into effect. That means gas is $3.80 a gallon with no federal gas tax. Now, you pay attention to current events as much or more than I do. How long is it going to take the oil companies to jack it back up to $4 an hour a gallon and make a 20-cent profit off of you and off of me and off of every American?
But at least that should open the eyes, and I agree with you. They're not going to lose. Whatever they reduce it, they're going to hike it back up.
You know, the first rule, Ed, when you walk into a casino in Vegas or Atlantic City or anywhere else, the first rule you have to go in there knowing is that the house always wins.
Absolutely. It's not designed for anybody to win but the house.
Right, and the same thing applies on Carnival Midways and the popcorn stand at the rodeo.
Well, I guess that it's hard to convince me that a little bit of relief is better than nothing.
It is. A little bit of relief is better than nothing. But nothing is what we're going to get.
Nothing is, you know, in the long, no matter which way it turns out, in the long run, they're going to get it back.
I mean, if let's assume that Hillary Clinton becomes the president of the United States on January 20th, 2009, and immediately declares that there will be a summer gas tax holiday beginning Memorial Day weekend of 2009. What do you reckon else is going to be? I mean, the way things have been happening and the way events have been progressing, what else do you reckon will be going on by June the 1st, 2009? Now, Hillary Clinton has said, Ed, that she is willing to obliterate Iran. What do you reckon that's going to do to gas prices?
Well, you and I both know what it's going to do. You know, they're going to be out of socket.
You know, I would like to, more than seeing a 20-cent break in the price of gas, Ed, you know what I'd like to see? I would like to see this actually engender, and I would love to see Barack Obama come out and say this. I'd like to see us talk about regressive taxation. Now, I know that the mere two words is probably enough to put the average American citizen straight to sleep. Regressive taxation? Wait a minute. What about Reverend Wright? You know?
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like to see us have a discussion about regressive taxation. I would like to know. I would like some of these silk suit types like Hillary Clinton and John McCain and, yes, Barack Obama, explain to me why working people making $6, $7, and $8 an hour have to carry millionaires on their damn backs every day when they go to work.
Well, it's been going on. I mean, you know yourself, the middle class, just to give you an example, they're the only ones that don't have a national health bill. The poor has got the extreme poor has got a health card. The rich don't need it, so who is it without it? The man paying the most taxes.
Sure. Sure, and look here in our own state, Ed. Look at West Virginia. The Republicans thought they were being real cute a couple of years ago. You remember when they came out and said, we're the Republican Party. We want to eliminate the food tax. And that resonated with a lot of people. And as a Democrat, I can say that it resonates with me because I despise regressive taxes. And silk suitors like Joe Manchin came out and said, well, we can't do that. That would break the state government. You know what? He's right. It would break the state government. Unless, Ed, consider. You know where most of the coal that comes from mountaintop removal and most of the coal mining in this state goes, don't you, these days? It's not going out of state. It's going out of country. It's going halfway around the planet. It's going to China.
Yeah, I see stockpiles of it in Norfolk, Virginia, and, being ready to load on ships down there when I go down there.
Now, with that being the case, you know what we could do if we were serious about it? Since we're not even using the coal here at home, and we're shipping it to China, we could jack the tax rate up on coal so high that we wouldn't have to think about a food tax or a gasoline tax. I mean, the sticker on the pump, if you're sitting there just reading when you're pumping it at the station in anywhere in West Virginia, will tell you that you're paying 44.1 cents per gallon of tax on gasoline. Now, 18.9 cents of that is federal. That means that roughly 34 cents of it is state. We could take, if we were determined to do it, we could take the taxes off of food in this state. We could take the taxes off of soda pop in this state. We could take the taxes off beer and liquor and wine and tobacco in this state. In other words, take the tax monkey off of poor folks' back and get every nickel of it back and more by hanging it on the coal companies that are destroying the places that we live and poisoning our children, our grandchildren, and our great-grandchildren.
Well, not only that, the timber, the gas, and all of it should be, how much timber are they? Does it wind up being?
Do you realize that the average property owner in West Virginia who might have an acre of ground or some such, do you realize he pays more in property taxes than that same acre is paid for by Georgia Pacific and West Vaco that own most of this state?
Oh, sure. We had a what they call a fall festival up around Jackson Mills a few years ago. And we thought we had something going when Kaufman ran for governor, and the farmers wouldn't adhere to crop rotation, or they wouldn't go along with what the plan that would have taken care of all of it. They had to have the crop rotation, according to them. In other words, you always got one greedy bunch that is not going to sacrifice anything.
Sure. But
let me change the subject a little bit if you're not...
No, go right ahead.
...tied into something else that you wanted to say.
No, go ahead.
Am I interfering with anything else?
Oh, heck no. No. This is conversation radio, Ed.
Okay. This is... the count now is over 55,000 votes are in, and 59% Clinton and 41% Obama. But what I want to talk about was McCain. You know, you were concerned in one conversation we had about McCain and how the Democrats, when the Democrats, when this thing is finally wound down, I'll do odds now that McCain don't get 38% of the vote, because the Democrats will come together. In other words, exit polls today showed that 59% of the people that's voting for Obama will turn right around and vote for her, for Hillary, if she's nominated, if she's the nominee. So that shows you that when the Democrats come back and they get it together, they're gonna get 75 or 80, or, 65% of the vote anyway. Do you disagree, or do you have any insight on that?
I sure want you to be right.
Well,
I hope you're right. I pray you're right.
One Coke anyway, but I'll bet you another Coke that he don't get 35% of the vote.
I'm writing that down, Ed.
Okay.
35%. Now, right. You know, what remains to be seen is, first of all, you know, the other night I had Paul Waldman on the show and his book called, talking about the book called McCain's Free Ride. Anytime you talk about the electoral process, you have to factor in, Ed, the fact that McCain is going to get the Teflon treatment from the press corps.
Right.
And from not just Fox, but CNN. You know, CNN has hired Francis Townsend and, who's the other hateful freak? I can't remember his name offhand. But they've hired two Bush administration flunkies for political commentators.
Yeah.
You know, so it's Fox. It's going to be Fox. It's going to be CNN. It's going to be, for the most part, MSNBC. It's going to be CNBC. It's going to be Bloomberg. It's going to be ABC, CBS, and NBC. All of them are going to be out there treating John McCain with kid gloves and wearing the hell out of Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama.
Yeah. Well, they're in the Democratic part of it already. This Jack Cafferty, I really like to listen to him because he was pretty well accurate, but they have both burnt me out, him and old Walt Switzner or whatever his name is, both, because they have not given news. They have shown partiality in this primary on as far as the Democrat goes. And I despise them making news instead of just forecasting them.
Right, and what you're talking about is the blurring between entertainment and actual conveyance of factual information.
Yeah,
and it's done for entertainment. You know, it's like the things you see in the little rip-off stores, for entertainment purposes only. That, you know, that ought to be a banner that rolls across every piece of every news channel in this country, for entertainment purposes only, so that nobody will actually think that they're being given real information, because it's not. It's a dodge. It's a fake.
A lot of it is opinion.
Sure it is. Sure it is.
That should not enter the picture. If they don't have facts, then keep your mouth shut.
Ed, I want to ask you about something, if I could, please.
Sure.
I want your opinion. Because I know that, you know, West Virginian that you are, and proud one at that, you are familiar with firearms, and you know your stuff. How do you feel, because this was a mailer that went out to voters in Indiana, how do you feel about a political direct mail ad from Hillary Clinton to Indiana voters that shows a rifle pointed at Barack Obama's head?
And the bolt on the wrong side. The best word I can use without cussing is disgusting.
I mean, where does this end, Ed?
Yeah. They have gotten so little, it's like Ned and the first reader playing with his yo-yo.
Since something like March of 2007, we have had it's a seemingly endless parade of he said and she said.
Yeah.
I have been reverend righted till I am ready to vomit.
You know, I am sick. You know what? I'm really sick of the political thing. I haven't been listening to a whole lot of it lately because it's just like, you know, you can only hold so much water and then you start to run out your ears.
Yeah, I know.
And that's the way I feel about how long this election campaign has lasted. And all that's been done, in my opinion, could have been done in a week.
Ed, have you ever hunted with a rifle that's got set triggers?
Yeah, I really have on that, but it was black powder, and it was you set one trigger, and the other trigger, that it was so touchy that it went off just to almost the fan of the finger. But not a high-powered rifle. In fact, I'll tell you the truth, and, you know, I thought a new gun's pretty good. I've never seen one.
Well, you know, that's mainly because they're sold, for the most part, in Europe.
Yeah.
And as someone who's done a little hunting, not very good hunting, but hunting just the same, I prefer shotguns and birds over sitting in the woods waiting for a deer, but, you know, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
This bothers me just a little bit because I'm looking at this ad, and you're right, it's a Mauser 66. It was an extremely high-dollar German firearm for hunting purposes. It never came in a left-handed, left-bolted configuration.
And double trigger. I've had two Mausers, and neither of them had double triggers.
Yeah, that set trigger configuration. You remember back in 2004 when John Kerry showed up for the UMWA Labor Day rally down at Racine?
Mm-hmm.
He showed up, and they proudly gave the UMWA proudly gave John Kerry, in order to show West Virginians that he was okay with guns, proudly gave him a Remington 30-06.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he held it over his head, and everybody clapped and cheered. And the right wing just made so much fun of him for that and talked about how, you know, he was owning it illegally and all of this stuff. It's, you know, it's a little bit embarrassing to me when people who don't know about firearms start talking about firearm rights.
Yeah. Well,
because I'm guessing you're not going to catch Hillary in the duck blind anytime in the near future.
No, and not only that, those kind of people don't have to worry about the kind of stuff of keeping a gun in your home to protect your home. They don't live in the real world. They got a 10-foot chain link wire fence with barbed wire around the top, plus two Dobermen running around in the yard at night. So they don't have any worries. They can go to bed and go. But the average guy, and where, especially in a high crime district, they're going to have something to protect their home. In fact, there's a new law coming in July 1st, I think, that you're allowed to defend your property. You know, used to be you had to back off and not shoot first.
West Virginia's never been a retreat state.
No, and we're not now. But it's the law is on our side now.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. No, it's been on our side.
Yeah.
We've been a stand and blaze state for generations. As long as there's been a West Virginia, we've been a stand and blaze state.
Yeah.
But the NRA talked voters or talked the legislature into thinking that we weren't.
Yeah.
In West Virginia, you've never had to retreat.
Yeah. Well, anybody that, you know, nobody has to tell me when to shoot. If they're coming through my door, nobody has to show me a law or nothing else. I know what to do.
Oh, I know.
And most of us do.
Absolutely.
I want to get off that a little bit if you still got time.
No, go right ahead. Go right ahead.
A little bit more politics.
Sure.
One is we got a man running for the Senate that it was told me today about him getting a 20-year-old girl pregnant. That's the sheriff. He's running in Shirley Love's place.
Right, here in West Virginia.
In addition to that, he's drunk enough of whiskey to float a battle wagon. And we're talking about putting him down there. And there's no one else on the agenda except a Republican. And, Bob, I'm telling you the truth. I'm thinking seriously about voting Republican. One Republican in my lifetime. And then you got Shirley Love running his. Do you know the deal behind that?
No, I don't. I mean, I know that he's Shirley is certainly a fixer in this county.
Okay. Well, his son, his grandson, is Bob Workman's son, and Bob Workman married Shirley Love's daughter. Well.
Is this the daughter that got the gig on the gaming commission or whatever?
I don't know about that.
Okay, well, that's a while back. Never mind.
But anyway, he was caught in bed with another woman. So they got a divorce, and right away they took that boy, his name is Benjamin, or Ben, Workman, and they took him to Fayetteville, or wherever it takes to get his name changed. They changed to Love so that he would have a political future.
Merciful God.
I'm telling you, that is the piece of crap of the war, of this county especially. I mean, it's all about Shirley Love and his people. You know, his daughter is on the parole board making $40,000 or $45,000.
Yeah, that the parole board, not the gaming commission, the parole board, sure,
yeah. All right. She's he took care of that. And he took care of his other son, but for some reason that it hasn't ever become clear, he ran for magistrate at 19 years old and won it, and then had to get out for some odd reason. And
it's better than a soap opera, isn't it?
Huh?
It's better than a soap opera.
Yeah, I'm telling you, if the people knew what was going on, they wouldn't just not vote for these people. They'd go out there and help him move out. But I just have to expose people like him. And he, you know, he took $79,000 from coal and or timber and gas and these different outfits like that. And he has never, that I know of, voted the first time on a strong labor bill.
Probably not. And see, that's the kind of stuff that matters to me. I personally don't care if a fella drinks his liquor straight out of the bottle with a straw, as long as he votes the right way. You're talking
drunk.
Yeah, but you're talking about this Senate, this state Senate candidate, and Ed, you know, I got a sample ballot from one of the sheriff candidates the other day, and I was looking at it, and I was going down, I was going, leaving that one blank, leaving that one blank, leaving that one blank, because you know what, I don't, there's nothing says that you've got to vote for a candidate on a particular office.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, state Senate, the Democratic primary ticket, there is Sue Blake Anderson, Bill Laird IV, and Jerry Cook. And
what
I know
what is the woman? What is she, a Democrat or Republican?
This is the Democratic ballot for May.
Okay, I didn't know she was running.
Sue Blake Anderson, Bill Laird, and Jerry Cook. And I don't know diddly about.
He's not a Democrat, I don't believe.
No, he is now. He is now.
Well, then he got my vote. I mean, you could never catch Bill Laird in. And like I said, he kept the liquor store in business. Plus, the affair with the, you know, and I know those are personal things, but he has never done anything or indicated anything that he was for unions or that he was for the working class people. And you could never catch him in office unless somebody jumped over New River Bridge and he had a, we're investigating that, you
yeah.
know, that kind of deal. But, Bob, I'm telling you, if you really knew the bottom line under this county in politics, it would make you take an X-lax.
I better not know anymore because I'm pretty much there in the first place.
Yeah, well, you reached pretty close to the point of total disgust.
I mean, I'm looking at, you know, I'm looking at the mess that our state Supreme Court of Appeals is in. You've got people. There's only one person on this ticket for state Supreme Court that I'm interested in voting for, and that's Bob Bastris. Now, you can vote for...
Good enough for me. I know there's another one, woman running.
Margaret Workman. She's good. I wouldn't sweat it at all to have her back on the ticket. So I'll probably vote for Peggy Workman and Bob Bastris.
Okay.
Ain't no way I'm voting for any Spike Maynard.
You're doing what?
Ain't no way I'm going to vote for Spike Maynard.
Well, you know, I've heard that from even politicians has told me
that dirty bastard Anybody that sits down and has drinks with Don Blankenship has no right to expect my vote.
Yeah.
Because you know what? I don't.
Birds of a feather flock together.
Not just that, but I don't touch filth, and I don't run with those that do.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure we'll talk some more before this West Virginia thing. But now the vote is 58% for Hillary and 42 for Obama, and there's over 120,000 votes been cast.
But they're not making any projections, are they?
Oh no, this is only 10% of the vote.
Yeah, yeah.
120-some thousand.
Well, it'll be. Have they said when the polls close?
Those have, I believe, in Indiana, but. Well, the other one might have closed now because when we started talking, they said the other ones would close within the hour, so they might have closed too. They might have closed at 7, North Carolina. It will either be at 8 or 7, one or the other.
Well, what I said at the beginning of the program is the kicker, and that is nothing gets settled today. Nothing gets settled next week. Nothing gets settled the week after that. And I know that Howard Dean says he wants a nominee by June and he wants a commitment by the superdelegates. Well, you know, you can wish in one hand and you know how that goes.
Right.
We're going to get a nominee in August.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a disputed, divided, divisive, cantankerous convention. And frankly, it's what a convention ought to be. We wouldn't be doing all this hand-wringing and sweating if it wasn't for the fact that the Republicans have pretty much eliminated any idea of a democratic process in their their nominating process.
Yeah, but it is nerve-wracking if you are for somebody pretty strong. You know what I mean?
Bear in mind, Hillary Clinton is mathematically impossible.
Well,
if she wins Indiana, North Carolina, and everything from here on, she can't catch Obama.
Yeah. Well, she'll win West Virginia, I'll bet you that.
Oh, I'm sure she will. I'm sure she will. You know, you and I both live here, and we know who lives here. Mm-hmm. And then see, I'm of a different stripe than you, Ed. I think Hillary Clinton will win West Virginia, and if she is the Democratic nominee, then the Bible thumpers and the gay haters and the gun lovers will absolutely run. I mean run, not walk or crawl. They will run to the voting booth to vote for John McCain in November.
Yeah. Oh, they will anyway. You know, that church movement, all they can see is abortion, and they don't realize that the military abortions that's going on in Iraq and those other places.
Well, they don't bother them because those are brown abortions.
Yeah, they're brown people. But, you know what? And, you know, another thing that I don't understand that the Christians or so-called Christians don't see is that abortion has gone up 14% since Bush has went in there. Now, you tell me.
That's because of the liberal media.
Yeah, well. Or he blamed, like his last speech, everything was Congress's fault.
Well, there's that too.
What a lying piece. A lying dog.
I know. And you know what? I wouldn't have got busted up if you'd said what he was a lying piece of.
Yeah.
But you struggle to not do that, and I do too. But Lord, sometimes you just want to, don't you?
Yeah, when you feel your face pounding over what goes on, you're about ready to let it come out your ears. But Bob, I appreciate your time. You know, I appreciate the program. I appreciate the exposure you give. And there's a lot of these educated guys that call in there that I don't know what the heck they're talking about. But I still listen and try to learn from them.
Well, we're always glad.
Very simple approach to everything.
Well, I tell you what, no doubt about it, simple is 9 times out of 10 the best approach.
But so, I'm very complicated when it comes to Joe Manchin. I despise his guts.
Yeah, I kind of share that. I do share that. I met a man this past week when I was down in Institute, West Virginia, Ed, and I'm going to feel real good about voting for him for governor in November. Name's Jesse Johnson. He's going to be running on the Mountain Party ticket, and I'm going to vote for him. I'm a Democrat, but I'm going to vote for Jesse Johnson.
What is he, an independent?
He's a Green. He'll probably have the, I'm sure he'll have the Mountain Party nomination.
Yeah.
But he is decidedly against big coal. He is decidedly against mountaintop removal, and he's for about 99% of the stuff that I'm for. And frankly, I don't think there's any risk of me putting, who's that crazy high school dropout over there in Beckley that's going to have the Republican nomination?
Weeks?
Yeah, Russ Weeks-minded. I don't feel any compunction to vote against Joe Manchin by voting for Jesse Johnson, because I'm going to actually vote for what matters to me.
I guess that I'll stick with Mel Kessler.
Well, that's what I'm going to do. Even though, as between Mel and Joe, I decidedly prefer Mel.
Yeah.
But frankly, and you know, you and I are both realists. Mel ain't going to get the nomination.
No,
he didn't have the state machine, and he decided too late, and you know.
It would be a stroke of luck. Bird would have to die and Manchin appoint himself at his position before Mel could. Then Mel would be the person.
Yep.
That'd be the only chance, and I don't even like to talk in those terms.
No, but you recognize that those are realities.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's where my heart lies, you know, but Mel will not be the nominee in November. And well, I think, yeah, we both realize that.
You know, I think that he's working his hind end off and spending more money than he thought, but the tree ain't going to bear no fruit, I don't believe.
Well, if he had decided to do this a little bit earlier, and he had done a little bit more toward campaigning in the northern end of the state...
Well, he's up there now. The radio stations are calling him in. He was in Wheeling or Martinsburg or somewhere up there this morning.
Well, they're good.
They're calling him, and they like him.
Problem is, Joe's got a machine.
You ain't kidding.
And it bangs on all eight all the time, Ed.
Yeah, and he's shrewd and dirty.
But I'm done. But I tell you this, honest to God, I'm done voting for him. I'm done voting for Joe Manchin.
Oh, I wouldn't give him time of day, let alone a vote.
I was reminded a long time ago that a Manchin has never voted for another Democrat that doesn't have the name Manchin.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know what? I can apply that standard, too. I ain't a voting for no more Manchins.
No. One is, they're like Bush, really. One was enough, but...
I'm not going to vote. You know, I'm done with vote. Look, let's just put it blunt, Ed. I'm done with voting for coal whores.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's what Joe Manchin is. He is a coal whore.
Yeah. He's in bed with the biggies. And, you know, I knew that when he come up here and got with Shirley Love and a couple of his pals and went skeet shooting. I thought, well, here's where the birds get together.
Yep. Exactly. The only difference is, didn't nobody get shot in the face? Ed, I tell you what, I'll put you back on hold if you want me to.
Sure thing.
All right, you take care. Good
right,
talking
thank,
to you.
Thank you for the conversation and the time.
Oh, it's always my pleasure, Ed, always my pleasure.
All right, well, I'll talk to you later.
All right, sounds good. Take care. Hey to Dreamer.
All right, it sure will, and you say hi to all of them over there.
Sure will. That's our buddy Ed from right here in Fayette County. Ed is 100% rock solid. If Ed tells you something, you can go to the bank on it. And I understand. Oh Lord, I understand that. You know, we talk some local politics. Might not necessarily mean anything to you if you're halfway or all the way across the country. But you know what? Local West Virginia politics is no different from local New York politics or local Louisiana politics or local California politics because, come on, everybody, all politics is local. And what you do on the local level will shape what happens on the national level. I've said it a million times. Here, let's do it again. You want change in this country? Don't wait for change to come from some presidential candidate. Lord God, just as well off expecting change to come from the damn Easter Bunny. Change happens on your county commission. Change happens on your city council. Change happens in your House of Representatives or your House of Burgesses or delegates or what the hell ever. Change happens in your state senate. Change is like a pyramid. It happens from the ground up. Change happens in the hearts of voters when they get to vote. And it is the changed hearts of voters that then changes the hearts of elected representatives. I have thought all day long about that wonderful conversation I had last night with Congressman Bob Filner and what he said. And he said, Congress didn't end the Vietnam War. The people ended the Vietnam War. The people led and Congress followed. Same thing happens on city councils. Same thing happens on county commissions. Same thing happens in state houses. So ultimately, it is up to us. And part of the whole up to us thing is making sure that the votes get counted and that the voters who are legally entitled to vote, who are enfranchised to vote, get to vote. I don't know why that's such a challenge. I want to finish up, if you don't mind. And by the way, the lines are open. Knock yourself out. These are the conversations that I love. I hope you do, too. Because what you just heard, you cannot hear on any terrestrial radio station. Liberal, moderate, conservative, Republican, Democrat. Nowhere, and I mean nowhere, on a terrestrial radio station can you hear that kind of conversation take place. Because even National Petroleum Radio has to stop and say, brought to you by a generous grant from the Toothpick Foundation. We don't stop for that. Hell, I don't stop for the top of the hour half the time. Because I don't have to. I am that free. I am just that free. And you're that free, too. And if you've got a bee under your bonnet or a burr under your saddle, don't let it sit there and wear a hole in your hide. Pick up the damn phone. 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, HEADON. It's easy. If you want to save us a buck, 304-658-3333. That's the direct dial number. That's not the toll-free. That's on your nickel. And you know what? I'll try not to keep you sitting on hold. That's my promise to you. That's what it goes for when you contribute to keep the horn on the air every month. Well, like I said last night, we're right at about a little less than $500 right now on our monthly goal of $2,000. And the hole got $300 deeper last month because we only made it to $1,700. But we're going to be here as long as you manifest the desire to have us here. I want to share a couple of things with you. This comes from our buddy Patrick. I asked a few nights ago, and I'm just using a couple of the letters I got, I asked a couple of nights ago if you guys minded me mentioning contributors' names. And Patrick wrote in and he said, use my name, please use my name. He said, go ahead and use my name. Go ahead and let the listeners know that even when I was unemployed for 5 months, I only missed 1 month in December, and then I made up the difference for it in January when I got hired on at another company. He also said, after hearing David rave about the new Al Green album, I immediately went and found it when I got home, and I have to say he is more often than not right on with his music and movies. I had a hard time shutting the album off for the third time through. He said, so here I am on the podcast this afternoon. Hugs to Agnes. Yeah, that kind of dedication. Let's try another one. Maura in New Jersey says, hello, fellow Horn audience members. I asked Bob to read this to you because I'm unable to speak on the phone, and I have a real need to ask each and every one of you, whom I consider a special family, to contribute to the Horn. I fully understand just how hard times are now financially for everyone, and I know being liberals we donate to any number of good causes, but please think about just how important the Head On Radio Network is in our lives. What would it be like, she asks, if one afternoon or evening you turn on the PC, click to the Horn bookmark to listen to that day's broadcast, and only find it gone? It's a loss we really can't afford. She says, can you afford $1, $5, or $10 or more on a monthly basis? The government just sent out the stimulus checks. Can you share a bit with the Horn? Folks, this is our station that allows us to share ideas and discuss any and all topics. We are responsible for the care and feeding of the network. Liberals are givers, not takers like the right wing. I will end my appeal in the hope that you will take to heart what I have said, and if at all possible, you will open your wallets to contribute. No amount is too small or too large. Thanks again, Bob, for all you do for all of us. Best wishes, Maura. All I do for you. There's nothing more humbling than seeing something like that. Because I know when I see things like that and I see the contributions come in and the notes that come with them, I know that what we dreamed of in forming the Horn, what started as a dream between Agnes and Wayne and me and grew to be a dream that Ben Burt shared and shares and expanded into a dream that Guy James shares, and expanded into a dream that John Fox shares, and back then that Bruce Birch shared, and that Peter Godbold shares, and that Billy Shears shares, and that Rick Goodner has shared. I know that you all understand the gravity of it, that you want this as badly as we do, that you want honest dialogue and discussion and conversation that doesn't come with any strings attached. I talked to a gentleman the other day, and I'll shut up about this and move on to other stuff, but I just want you to know the things that happened. Talked to a gentleman the other day who is a professional marketer, an internet-based marketer. And we were talking a little bit about what the Horn is trying to do, and we were talking about things like advertising. And we were talking about the model, the right-wing model of selling ignorant crap to people who are too silly and too stupid to realize that they're buying ignorant crap. You know, vacuum cleaners that pick up bowling balls and Swedish mattresses and herbal baldness cures and magic erection remedies. And I said, we cannot operate that way. I said, unless I am convinced in my heart of hearts that the people who share their time with the Horn are beset with houses full of bowling balls, I am not going to hustle a vacuum cleaner that picks the damn things up. Because I'm just that way. And I figure you would rather have the uninterrupted conversation and the free-flowing, free-wheeling discussion and dialogue that you get here than to have me have to take a break and say, and now more from the, you know, we'll be back with more commercials right after this conversation. And we'd have to stop calling ourselves conversation radio and start calling ourselves talk radio. So that's why we're here with our hat in our hand and our hand out, holding the hat. And that is why you so thoroughly inspire me every month. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, could I speak to the hillbilly elitist?
This would be your hillbilly elitist.
Oh.
How you doing, Juanita?
I'm fine. How are you? I just have a couple of things I wanted to say. the person who says that they're going to come out with some things about the minister.
Right.
I guess Hagee.
Yes.
I think a lot of them they should concentrate on is parsley. He is really way out.
Oh, isn't he poison?
And I just sent you a Mother Jones article about McCain used saying that he was his spiritual guide back in February.
Oh, yeah.
I think they should add that guy to the list because he's really far out.
Parsley is pure poison. Parsley was part and parcel. Well, if I say that too many times in a row, I'll fall all over my tongue.
Just think about eating parsley.
Exactly. He was part and parcel of the whole Ohio nightmare that stole the election from John Kerry.
Yeah, and he's got on his website, he's got a lot about politics, a lot, even get people to register to vote.
I got an email today, Juanita, from one of our friends, Jennifer, who sent me a link to a Democratic Underground video piece by Cenk Uygur. You know, he's the Young Turk.
Yeah, I like him.
And it was a really good piece of work because he had found a piece of video of John Hagee screaming like a madman from the pulpit. You know, of course, you know he's in the pulpit, so that kind of means he probably is a madman. But screaming about how if poor people won't get off their butts, they can starve.
Well,
and I just
if the poor people get hungry enough, maybe they can feed on him.
Eat the rich. Eat the rich.
But
you know what, Juanita? When I hear stuff like that, I go absolutely crazy.
Yeah.
Because there is an implied bigotry in something like that that just makes me sick to my stomach. To see a millionaire. See, this man is so rich. Hagee is so insanely, obscenely rich that he won't even report how rich he is. Okay?
Well, he's even, you know, come from that kind of a family. You know, his father and all was in the religious business.
Sure. But he is so rich.
He doesn't know what it's like to do with that.
No, and to have him stand there in the pulpit and talk about poor people and saying that they won't work because he has made the assumption that if you get public assistance, you're unwilling to work.
Right.
You know what? I know lots of poor people because of where I live.
Right.
And I don't know anybody who works any harder than poor folks.
Right.
Because poor folks have to work twice as hard because they get paid twice as little to just get by.
And the people who are working, you might have to make mighty little to get anything from the government at all.
Yes, indeedy. Yes, indeedy. The standards here in West Virginia are ridiculous.
And another thing is that I wanted to add to that, too, is I was wondering what McCain's connection to Mooney, the Reverend Mooney, is. You know, the one that...
We need to, you know, Mark Levine had John Gorenfeld, who is
right. And, you know, I've got the pictures of the Bushes and all with him, you know, having the fun, and, you know, Mama Bush and Daddy Bush, and even Pat Boone. In fact, I found a recording of Pat Boone being an MC of something honoring Mr. Moon.
Yeah, I've seen that too. Oh, yeah. Woo, that'll bring supper up, won't it?
Mr. Moon, meet Mr. Boone.
Oh, Lordy.
And this guy is saying he's the Messiah, that he's that Jesus failed, and he's going to take, and now I heard he's turned it over to his son.
He has, his youngest son. And, you know, you got a racket like that, you don't just let die. I mean, my God, Juanita, the Moonies own property in Brazil. They own property in Argentina, Paraguay. You know, they own a significant tract, I believe, in Paraguay. And if you look at that, suddenly it makes a little more sense why the Bushes would buy up a bunch in Paraguay, too, because they're joined at the hip with the Moonies.
Yeah, and it shows him with Jerry Falwell hugging, you know. But I did send you that thing about Ron Parsley and McCain.
I just saw that come in. When the show's over, I'm going to sit down and digest that because I think we've got to
put all that out.
We've got to hang all these weirdos around John McCain's neck
and tell the truth.
Yeah,
we don't have to make up stuff.
No, you really
it's
don't. I mean,
so weird.
I mean, you don't have to make it up about Hagee because you know you've got Hagee right there saying
that.
You've got
to see that she said that. Jake Uger did it?
Yeah.
On his website? Or
well, I imagine it is on his website. I got it from, it was posted over at Democratic Underground. But, you know, yeah, I'm glad to see Cenk doing this kind of stuff.
He's smart, too. And
sure he is.
He's one of my favorites.
And, you know, like I said, I'm glad to see him doing it because, you know, I've only been hollering about the poison of the religious right for 5 years. It's nice to see other liberals catching on.
Yeah.
And you know maybe if we make enough noise, even the so-called professional media will have to pay attention, because John McCain is sucked up with Hagee, he is sucked up with Parsley,
and I bet he's with Mooney too.
And you know what? Before it's all said and done, Dobson will come around, and yeah, you'll find a Mooney connection, sure thing. I mean, but again, you don't have to make anything up about these creeps because
that guy that was the speaker before the girl, one. Had cancer, said he couldn't live on White House money.
Oh, what, Hastert?
Who?
Are you talking about the Speaker of the House?
No, the one that talks to the
Oh, Tony Snow. Yeah. Tony Snow. He's the one that went to CNN.
You know he's a Mooney?
Is he really?
That's what they're saying.
Wouldn't surprise me a bit.
Definitely is a Mooney.
Although what I've read some about their rituals and ceremonies, and I just don't want anything to do with it.
Oh,
I don't even want to think about the handkerchief ceremony.
Really, I've been saying it for a number of years now.
But
it needs to come out, and I was so thrilled when Mark had that on his show.
How do you reckon so-called mainstream America would react, Juanita, if you played them audio of Pastor Hagee saying, you know what the difference is between a woman with PMS and a terrorist? You can negotiate with a terrorist. How do you think?
That's so funny, ain't it?
Yeah. How do you think women in America would respond to that?
I know how I respond to it. I think it should be out, and I don't think that's. I mean, we don't have to. We can show what's true. We don't have to make up lies like they do. But we need to do it some way, somehow.
Well, you know, people like Cenk are doing it. God knows Mike Malloy has been going hammer and tongs at the religious right since God was a baby.
Yeah.
I've been doing it for 5 years now.
Yeah.
So it's not like the effort's not being made.
You know what kind of gives me hope?
What's that?
About a lot of stuff is that when the Watergate thing first came out, it was that I knew about. Was when McGovern was running, you know, against Nixon. And he was talking about it. And nobody knew what he was talking about. And it took like 4 years before it started really coming out. And when it came out, it just came out with a bang. So that gives me heart to think that this is maybe going to eventually come out about things like this, and it should.
Yes, it should, and I hope it does. But you know, we don't have the luxury of time. It's got to,
I know.
It's got to happen quickly.
And they should say, do you believe what these people believe? You know, like they have Barack. You know.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'm inclined to go along with his pastor with a lot of things, many things.
Well, the business about 9/11 that Reverend Wright said, he was only talking about blowback. And you know what? There was an element of truth in it. Now, I've seen some hand-wringing by some so-called liberals. Oh, it was terrible to say that. That's like what Ward Churchill said. You know, Ward Churchill spoke some truth.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with his little Eichmann's comment. I'm sorry, he just did.
Yeah.
And the right wing had a fit about it. You know, Dick Durbin spoke truth about the way we treated so-called detainees in Afghanistan and Iraq.
Uh-huh.
And he said, if you didn't know better, if you didn't know it was American troops doing this, you would think it was the Soviets or the Nazis. And Lord God, from Rush Limbaugh to Neil Bortz to Janet Parsall, Ann Coulter, and all that filthy crowd, they had a hissy, and I mean they had a fit, and they demand that Dick Durbin apologize. And he held his ground for a little while, and then he went, okay, I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
And you know what? But we've got to get to a place, Juanita, where we're done apologizing.
Yeah. I Jesus even told the truth, you know, believe it or not.
I do believe
he called the people what they were.
You mean generation of vipers?
Yeah, the lawyers and the religious leaders,
and the people too, because he was surrounded by some stupids in his own right.
Yeah,
some of them were his apostles or disciples.
Yeah.
You know, sitting there saying, hey, Jesus, where am I going to sit when we get to the kingdom of God? Where am I going to sit, Jesus?
Yeah.
And you know, with that classic humor, Jesus looks at him and goes, you're all going to get crowns, okay? You're going to get crowns and you're going to sit at my right hand. Are you happy now? You know, because here's a man who is focusing day in and day out on how the least among us are treated, how we treat the poor, how we treat the sick, how we treat the homeless and the injured and the suffering. And he's got disciples saying, do I get a crown, Jesus?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, it's not it didn't make the final cut, but I think if we were to see the original edition, we would see a verse that said, and Jesus did then turn around and slap the living snot out of James or John or Peter or whomever.
James and John.
Zebedee, son of Zacharias, and said, what in the world are you talking about?
Well, I like somebody came up to Jesus and said, Master, make my brother divide an inheritance with me. And he said, man, who made me a judge or divider over you?
Yeah, which is a very nice old English, the Elizabethan English, King James English kind of way of saying, you got it all wrong, brother.
Yeah.
You just got it all wrong. I don't, you know, look, here's the bottom line, and frankly, I don't care if Reverend Wright never gets mentioned on this program again.
I know it.
I don't think that Jesus Christ would take issue with the first word that Reverend Wright said. Not one word.
Mm-mm. And, you know, maybe I'll be crucified for saying this, but if you ever listen to Farrakhan,
yeah,
most of what he said is the truth.
A lot of what he says is true, and then he goes crazy. Now, Louis Farrakhan does go nuts. It's not for me to say. I'm a white guy, but in my humble opinion, he goes nuts when he starts talking about Jews being descended from monkeys and
well, I think
all
that
of that.
Most from the past too, don't you?
No, I don't think he's cleaned up his act. because that shtick plays. Bigotry always plays. That's why there's still a Klan in this country, Juanita.
Yeah.
That's why there are movements like Farrakhan's. That's why there are militiamen, and that's why there is Hagee. See, you got in Hagee's church, when you see that video clip, you're going to see all these well-heeled, nicely dressed white people.
Mm-hmm.
And you got to understand that when he says, and the lazy people who won't get off their blessed assurance, they can starve for all I care. That's all code because they're all white. And what Hagee is saying is black people.
Yes.
Because in the bigoted, racist, prejudicial world of a pastor Hagee.
All white trash.
No. The white are the elect. They are the entrance to the kingdom of God because they buy into that same filthy racist code that Ronald Reagan put out there when he was talking about, well, we've got to do something about it. Nancy, the welfare queens are killing America.
You know what Jesus told the religious leaders? He said that they were talking about how good they were, you know, and he said that the prostitutes and the publicans, who were, I guess, sinners of the day, would go in the kingdom of heaven before they would.
Yeah, always pick
leaders.
Publicans, bartenders. Always picking on the bartenders and the hookers. You know, nothing changes. 2,000 years, same crap, different day.
But I will tell you, better be careful thinking you're so right.
I know.
My opinion.
No, you're absolutely right. Juanita, lovely talking to you, dear.
Yeah. I did want to say something I wonder what the faith-based people are doing to help the country out now.
The
ones at the White House?
Yeah, about the same as they've ever done, less than nothing.
I haven't heard of too much they've done.
Well, they've kind of gone stealth. Because
they take the money.
Yeah, hold on. Hey, they're faith-based. They'll always take the money. They got faith in everything except where the next dollar's coming from.
Yeah.
And that's what makes the last dollar so important.
Yeah. We got like 10 more days for my little thing here with the county.
Yeah. How's it coming?
My son's back is just about rotted out.
So. Oh, mercy.
Whatever.
Well, keep plugging away. We'll be thinking of you.
Yeah, well, I did find where I might can get a lawyer.
Good.
It took a while. Most of them are just for divorces, these free lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
But I did finally maybe if I have to. So just keep on plugging along.
Absolutely. Don't be afraid to fight these SOBs.
Okie doke.
All right, you take care, Juanita.
You too.
Bye now.
And night night.
All right, and hey, don't you be elitist now. Oh, I love Juanita. I love all the conversations that take place here. She said, "You know what gives me hope? You know what gives me hope? That these conversations are taking place." That's what gives me hope. Because once all of us have decided to shut up and turn on the devil box and watch Dancing with a Millionaire's Nose for the rest of our lives, that's when we know that it really, really, really is all over. Heading to the top of the hour, you might be interested to know this. David Limbaugh, who is the he's only a filthy a modestly filthy rich lawyer. He's the black sheep of he's the ne'er-do-well of the Limbaugh clan, and I mean clan with a K. He's out there he's got a column out today. Oh, I'm sorry, not Limbaugh. This is Paul Weyrich. This is the guy who helped invent the religious right. Column: photo ID perfect for honest voting. Again, remember, notice, I said he was a founder of the religious right, and he writes, "Is the American Civil Liberties Union ever on the right side of any issue?" I don't know, Paul, were they on the right side when they were defending your buddy Rush Limbaugh, who was eating OxyContin hand over fist? Were they on the right side of an issue then, you filthy freak? "On one issue out of a bundle, we might get ourselves in agreement.
As for most, forget it. For example, the United States Supreme Court upheld the constitutionality of an Indiana statute which requires a picture ID in order to vote. If voters can't afford to obtain a picture ID, the state of Indiana will provide it for them. But they won't buy the gas to get them there, or the car, or the, and if voters do not have a picture ID with them on election day, they can cast a provisional ballot and then show up with a picture ID within 10 days. Tell that to the nuns. Tell that to the nuns, you dirty right-wing pig. As soon as the Supreme Court decision was announced, the ACLU was whining big time. If I didn't know better, I would have thought real people would be deprived of the right to vote. Well, you know, they're not registered Republicans, Paul, so they're not real people in your book. Jesus, the swine are in the tunnel. So, lots coming up in the next hour, more than I will get to. Nine times out of ten, that's the way it works around here. So, as ever, what matters to you matters most to me. We'll take a little break. I will refill my water mug. And we will continue onward. You know the phone number, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, 304-658-3333, direct dial. That's how it works. NBC News now projecting that Obama wins in North Carolina, but that he is trailing Hillary in Indiana. No wonder, with those highly effective direct mail ads with a rifle pointed at Obama's head. I want to talk about that. It's talking about photography, and it's a little bit of dancing about architecture, but still, work with me here. We'll be back. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn.
It was down on the old Poncher train, down in my cotton and the cane. The buildings I did make and the houses I did build on the banks of the old Poncher train. Take me home, poor Julia, take me home. Take me home, poor Julia, take me home. For I have no place for to lay my head but to lay in poor Julia. Miss Julia and I went a walking. Sun not more than a half an hour high. We walk where the green grass grows up to our knees. Miss Julia hung her head and she cried. Take me home, poor Julia, take me home. Take me home, poor Julia, take me home. For I have no for to lay my head but to lay in poor Julia's arms. Knocking at the door. Miss Julia was sleeping in my arms, the banks of the old river shore. Take me for to lay my head, but to lay in poor Julia's son.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Canadian auto workers have approved a new 3-year contract with Ford Motor Company, avoiding a 2-tier wage structure. Jesse Russell reports.
The new contract, negotiated between the workers represented by the Canadian Auto Workers Union and Ford Motor Company, avoids the 2-tier wage model agreed on last year by the United Auto Workers. Under the 2-tier structure, new hires wouldn't benefit from the same pay rates as senior workers. Instead, the Canadian workers gave up a week of vacation and agreed to a wage freeze. The CAW now moves on to negotiations with Chrysler and MGM. The union hopes to use the Ford contract as a model for negotiations with those two companies.
The UAW in the U.S. has gone on a local strike, shutting down a Fairfax, Kansas GM plant. ACORN, the Association of Community Organizations for Reform Now, is conducting a voter outreach program that will reach 2.8 million low and moderate income voters this year. Tony McElroy is ACORN's Texas state chair.
We are targeting African American, Latino, new immigrant, and other underrepresented groups to make sure that we register them to vote, to get out and vote, and we keep them engaged in the process.
ACORN's goal is to register and mobilize voters who will then support candidates sensitive to the needs of low and moderate income workers. An immigrant coalition called the Transnational Institute for Grassroots Research and Action says it has a deal with Virtual Money Incorporated to provide money transfer services for migrant workers. The deal ensures fair pricing, responsible investing, and genuine community reinvestment, according to the group. The coalition had launched an international boycott against Western Union, alleging unfair corporate practices. The coalition is demanding that Western Union cut its fees, provide what the group considers a fair exchange rate, commit a dollar from every transaction to a transnational community reinvestment fund, and adopt human rights screens in its investment practices. A 19-day strike at Chile's state-run copper producers sent copper prices to a new record during the past month. That strike ended Monday with what the Confederation of Contract Workers is calling a big victory. The Chilean workers went on strike for bonuses and increased benefits. The contract workers walked off the job at mines across the South American country. They blocked roads and tried to prevent buses from getting through that were carrying non-contract employees to the mines. Now here's Jesse Russell with WIN's Economic Report.
Services were up for the first time since December and April. According to the Institute for Supply Management, the index for non-manufacturing businesses crept up to 52. Economists consider anything above 50 to be positive, and in March, the number was at 49.6. Service sector employers added 90,000 jobs in April, while the building sector saw a loss of 61,000.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins next. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Yes, indeedy. And before running back to that rifle story, I want to share something else with you, if I may. And it was, I was reminded of it when I heard the story on Labor Radio News there about the Chilean copper miners who won a victory. And I imagine if you're a copper miner in Chile, you're probably not driving the rolls quite yet. But significant labor victories in places like Chile generally mean that you get the right to be treated like a human being on days that have an R in them. So good on the Chilean copper miners. What did that remind me of? It reminded me of a story that rolled in from a listener. Oh, God Almighty. About, among other things, one of the universities here in wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. That university would be Marshall University down in Huntington. At one point in time, an aspiring football powerhouse that sort of sputtered. But never mind that. There's a guy named John Allison, okay? John Allison is the chief executive officer of a banking giant by the name of BB&T, which owns, bought up, sucked up a bunch of local banks here in West Virginia. And in John Allison's world, he says that the book that changed his life was, here we go again, Atlas Shrugged by Ayn Rand. Ugh. You know, I just, when I see something like that, my opinion of somebody like John Allison immediately just takes a big old torpedo hit right below the waterline, and the seawater starts rushing in, because if a miserable, pathetically, poorly written screed like Atlas Shrugged changed your life, you didn't have a life much worth changing. He says it's the best defense of capitalism ever written. Because it posits something that Ayn Rand called objectivism, in which selfishness is the only virtue. The only thing is, the objectivism that Ayn Rand postulates, in which selfishness is the only virtue, is a selfishness practiced by the already rich. And the reason the Chilean copper mine thing reminded me is because there are Chilean copper mines in Atlas Shrugged. And because the government and the left-leaning socialist Marxist workers and the labor organizations and the union wanted to be paid more, it caused collapse. So, see, whenever you see one of these right-wingers like John Allison saying that it's the best defense of capitalism ever written, what they're saying is it's the best defense of I'm rich, screw you, ever written. So what's he done? Let's talk a little bit about Marshall University. My wife went there. I know a lot of people who have gone there. Harvard on the Big Sandy, it ain't. But it's where a lot of kids in West Virginia wind up going because they can't go anywhere else. And it has a lot of needs. Marshall's professors are underpaid. Marshall's maintenance staff is underpaid. Based on the scandals they were involved in a couple of years ago, apparently Marshall's football team is underpaid. But that's okay. Screw everything else that Marshall needs. John Allison has given $1 million of his own money to Marshall University to establish a course dedicated to Atlas Shrugged and Adam Smith's The Wealth of Nations and help advance something that is being called, hey, it may not have been his own money because it's being named after his damn bank, something called the BB&T Center for the Advancement of American Capitalism. In other words, a miserable little think tank dedicated to screwing working people. Don't everybody cheer at once. There's a gentleman by the name of Rick Wilson whose columns show up periodically in the Charleston Gazette, and he's a damn fine writer, and he's got great, great progressive Christology instructor at Marshall. He's head of the West Virginia Economic Justice Project. And he says, I'm not real excited about this. He said, I think it's a curious interpretation of philanthropy to use corporate money to promote, really, an extremist philosophy, which it is. Meredith College 2 years ago rejected $420,000 from BB&T because it sort of gave them it made their skin crawl to think that they were going to allow a banking corporation to develop their curricula for them. But not at Marshall, baby. Anything for a buck at Marshall. Professor Carl Kent is all for it because he's been tapped to direct the center. And he said, in my experience, you're not able to propagandize students. Certainly that's not our intent in this course, and if it were our intent, we would be doomed for failure from the beginning. It's based on the idea of individualism. That means the freedom of individuals to contract with other people, the freedom to choose their occupation, the freedom to do what they see as being in their own best self-interest with the resources they have. You know, that might play with some people, but it sure doesn't play with me. Because if you go back and you read the early labor cases out of the United States Supreme Court, you'll find that labor unions were struck down as illegal because they violated... you got to just get your head in the right place for this concept. Because they violated the freedom of contract that companies had to enter into individual agreements with their workers and pay them less. No, really. I'm not real good at remembering case names this far out, but one of them had to do with bread bakers in New York City who wanted to form a bread bakers union, and the Supreme Court said, hell no! You ain't forming no bread bakers union! Who the hell do you think you are? The owner of the bakery? That violates the bakery's freedom of contract! Of course, freedom of contract was also used to defend the right of the company, the corporation, the bakery, the steel mill, the brick factory, what the hell ever, to fire anybody for any reason. And, here in West Virginia, freedom of contract meant that gun thugs from the coal companies were allowed to go up the hollers and turn families, little babies, pregnant mothers, mothers nursing children at their breasts, turn them into the muddy streets in the middle of a freezing winter. Freedom of contract meant that gun thugs from the coal companies could go up the hollers on armored railroad cars and shoot up tent cities. And that is what John Allison wants to promote at a university that my state tax dollars support. And I call BS. Sickening. You know who really ought to be on the forefront of throwing a fit about this grant? The English department of Marshall University should be in the forefront of throwing a fit about this grant. Because purporting that that piece of terrible potboiler fiction is in any wise related to good literature automatically devalues the degree of anybody who has ever graduated from Marshall University with a degree in English. It's garbage. It's torment. I know this for a fact because my lovely wife, who brings me home books sometimes because she knows I'd rather have books than diamonds or guns or flashy new cars, she brings me books. And one day she walked in and said, "Look, honey, look what I brought to you." And she handed me a copy of Atlas Shrugged that she had found in a cutout bin somewhere or a yard sale, or maybe the library had gotten the common sense to finally pull that miserable piece of crap off of its shelves. And I said, "Oh, God, it was like handing garlic to a vampire." No. It was like handing something satanic to a saint. Not that I'm a saint or anything. But I thought, I looked at her and said, "You've brought it to me. You've never brought me a book that I have not read. And I'm not going to start now, so I got to reread this thing." Because the last time I had tried to thumb through it, slogged through it, was way back when I rode my dinosaur to class in college. And oh, what torment it was. I made it through it. But oh, the sex scenes. The sex scenes. I mean, country folk will know what I'm talking about when I ask, "You ever heard Bobcats Getting It On Up the Holler?" It sounds like there's a rape going down. Well, when Ayn Rand wrote a sex scene, it was like watching bobcats get it on. It was just awful. And it's going to be passed off as great literature at Marshall University. It's a good thing I don't have a Marshall degree, because I'd have to mail it in. "Dear sirs, I will no longer list myself as a graduate of Marshall University, seeing as how you have devalued my degree by accepting $1 million from a corporate whore named John Allison to push a piece of miserable tripe that doesn't even belong in the damn comic book section, let alone on the list of great literature. But if he doesn't get away with it, Marshall, he'll give $1 million to West Virginia University, and I'm sure that Joe Manchin's little hooker, who's the president of the guy named Mike Garrison, little hooker, I'm sorry, that's being mean to the hookers, I don't know, little toad, little flunky, little lick spittle, Mike Garrison, who's the president of the university up there, "I'll take the million! Oh, I'll take the million, Alex!" And I'll have to mail in 2 degrees then. Gives me the fan tods. 20 minutes past the hour. I want to back up and finish off this business with the Hillary Clinton gun mailer. And there are those out there in the listening audience that I know for a fact are intimately familiar with photography and how it works and stuff. And so they might be better at explaining this than I am. But this mailer about where does Barack Obama really stand on guns went out to Indiana voters, and it looks like it may have worked. And it features a rifle that is called the Mauser 66. No longer manufactured, of German manufacture, being a Mauser. Really sweet rifle. It went for some $2,200 once upon a time. It was released in 1966. That's when the Mauser 66, you see how it works? $2,200 German import. And the photograph that you see, if you understand firearms, it is a bolt-action rifle with the bolt on the left side of the rifle, which means it's designed for a left-handed shooter. Because a right-handed shooter has the bolt of a bolt-action rifle on the right side of the firearm as you're looking down the barrel toward the muzzle. So what has obviously happened is that this image of this rifle has had to be printed backwards. Okay, the negative got reversed so that it would point to the left on the mailer and not to the right. Why did it have to point to the left? Because if it was pointing to the right, it would be pointing to where the postage paid by blah, 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 blah stuff goes. Which means that you could not then point the rifle at Barack Obama's head. I am so sick of this crap. Whether it's Hillary Clinton standing on a bandstand in North Carolina while Governor Mike Easley uses an anti-gay slur, and Hillary stands there grinning like a fox eating crap out of a wire brush, or whether it is a mailer sent in her name that has Barack Obama's head on the business end of a rifle, I am so sick of this. Where does Barack Obama really stand on guns? Here, let me just jump out there. I'm certainly not a surrogate for Barack Obama. I am not a spokesman for Barack Obama. He's a millionaire. Hillary's a millionaire. John McCain's a millionaire. It's a race between millionaires. But let me just guess here. Where does Barack Obama really stand on guns? How about a stance that says guns should not end the lives of innocent human beings? How's that for a stand on guns? How about a position that says that when a 5-year-old child gets hold of daddy's gun and blows away his 4-year-old sister, that is something we shouldn't tolerate in America? How about a position on guns that says that when you're sitting peaceably in your class on Western Civ, some insane dude shouldn't be able to bust in your door and blow your brains out while you're trying to get a college education? How's that for a position on guns, Hillary? Damn! Oh, I know. There was the whole thing with the doctored, or was it doctored or not doctored, business from the war room from 1992 last week. And he said this, and she said that, but she said, but he said, and, you know, oh, he's an elitist. Sick to death of it. But you know what? When I see an African-American presidential candidate with and his Democratic rival for the nomination has deliberately, see, that's the key here, deliberately, because this is not a mistake, this isn't an accident, and his Democratic rival has put out a mass mailing with a gun pointed at his head, I say it's over. I have gone back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Barack Obama is so sucked up with the coal industry that it gives me real pause. Hillary Clinton says maybe we could put the mountains back together again, but Bill comes out and starts talking smart in Morgantown, West Virginia last week and says, listen, if we're going to keep burning this filthy crap, we've got to burn it in such a way that we don't poison our posterity doing it. And that makes me go, maybe she'll have the better coal policy. Maybe she'll have the better energy policy. But now, here, at 26 minutes past 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on the 6th day of May, 2008, I tell you, where the primary is concerned, I would not vote for Hillary Clinton for all the Imperial Canadian whiskey in Canada. I will not. What did I say in that, when I was talking with Ed earlier? As a voter, I am not compelled to touch filth. And I won't. To the extent the damn thing will even be counted at all, I will not compromise my vote on someone who mails out material with a rifle pointed at the head of a black presidential candidate. By God, I will not do it. I have too much respect for my black brothers and sisters in this country, my Asian brothers and sisters, my white brothers and sisters. I have entirely too much respect for them to endorse with my lone, sad little vote a person who, in an effort to get a political advantage, sends out a mailer with a photograph of a rifle pointed at an African-American man's head. I know it's a blood sport. I understand it's brutal. I know it's tough. And I know the Republicans will do the same kind of crap to him if he's the nominee. And I pray, to the extent that there's a God I pray to, I pray that he has the stomach for the fight. I pray that he is a braver, harder, tougher man than John Kerry ever was. And I pray that Hillary Clinton's ad doesn't inspire some freak to go out and come up with a solution to the Obama problem. Because, see, they're all over this country. They are all over this country. And they blow away students in universities. And little five-year-old boys blow away their four-year-old sister. Because this country is gun insane. And if Hillary Clinton is the nominee in November, I continue to say that I will vote for her then. But where I have a say in the nominating process, I will not cast a vote for anyone who engages in this kind of hateful filth. Because if you open up that envelope somewhere along the way, you will see, I'm Hillary Clinton, and I approve this message. And that rifle had to be reversed. It is not a mistake. It is an intentional act to point the business end of that rifle at Barack Obama's head. And I am sick of it. I am sick of it from Bill O'Reilly talking about wanting to lynch Michelle Obama. I am sick of it from Hillary Clinton. I am sick of it, sick of it, sick of it, sick of it. And this does not mean I'm going to go and grab the Hope pom-poms and go out and cheerlead for Barack Obama, because he is a significantly, sincerely, thoroughly flawed candidate. But I will give him my vote. In a couple of weeks. 1 week, as a matter of fact. 1 week. So that's that. You want a little bit more? Chew on this for a minute. Never mind Flush Flemball out there suggesting that the mayor of L.A. was a shoeshine guy. That's just another day. That's what Republicans are going to do on the airwaves forevermore until someone shuts them up. I understand now why Bill Clinton hit on my date about a year ago at the Kobe Club in New York. I was minding my own business and Clinton came in.
And the short version is he used the mayor of Los Angeles to distract me while hitting on my date.
Flush, those aren't called dates in your world, buddy. They're called beards.
He came over three or four times, had Ron Burkle with him, and the mayor of Los Angeles, who I thought was either the shoeshine guy or a Secret Service agent. Ho, 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 oh, with half my sense of humor tied behind my back. Ho, 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 I'm a funny man. I'm an entertainer.
Well, let's move on to one of the great mysteries of broadcasting. Character by the name, and you know it well, of Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck has not only a stunningly low-rated television show on Headline News, he has a radio show. He gets a couple of million dollars a year for getting on the air and doing what you're about to hear. He suggested that Barack Obama and his wife Michelle are elitist because he's running for president, and making fun of just how tough it is in America today for black people. Well, he brings on a dummied-up, faked-up, phonied-up, ginned-up, rubed-up caller, and I'm just going to let you hear it. If you don't mind.
Yeah, that's exactly the day that I found out that I was that white.
We're talking to Honky Whitesville from the Obama campaign.
Yeah, you just said a white campaign advisor.
I beg your pardon?
I just want to make sure you get the title. I'm the white campaign advisor. I'm white.
I don't really think that's important, Mr. Whitesville.
Well, it's important to just important to, you know, to be truthful. I'm white. I'm a white man,
but that's okay.
I just want to make sure you
but it doesn't,
know.
It doesn't really matter.
And your audience knows that I'm white. I'm working with the Obama campaign, and I'm very white. I'm white. Ever see toothpaste? You know,
yeah.
You guys have a tube of toothpaste squirted out. You see that
sure.
White? That's sort of my color.
Right.
That's okay. The color. I was looking in the mirror yesterday after I woke up, and I was like, oh no, I have toothpaste all over my face. But actually, I just had face all over my face because my face is white, and I just so everyone knows I'm working for the Obama campaign and not white. But my name is Honky. My first name is my literal first name is Honky.
I don't even believe that's your first name.
And my last name is Whitesville.
So anyway,
now this is all a setup, okay? This is a setup. This is why I work so hard to make clear the bright line distinction between conversation radio and talk radio, because what Glenn Beck is doing is talk radio. We've been through this piece of sort of reverse minstrelsy here. I'm Honky Whitesville, and what you'll hear is Glenn Beck using this as a taking off point, a jumping off point for a sickening attack on Michelle Obama.
Honky Whitesville, you do work.
You know what I love is mayonnaise. And I just so you know, I don't pronounce it mayonnaise or mayonnaise. I want people to know that I know. I bought mayonnaise so many times.
Are you listening to this? Can somebody, for the love of God, please explain to me how this is entertaining, or cute, or funny, or informative, or, and this is kind of the bottom line, and I guess I'm manifesting my profound jealousy, how it's worth a couple of million dollars a year?
I know the word, I know how it's spelled, and how to properly pronounce mayonnaise.
That's Michelle Obama speaking for the campaign.
Of course, we agree with her. No, I've lots of...
She then went on to say, I'm not supposed to be here. I'm a statistical oddity. As a black girl raised on the south side of Chicago, I'm not supposed to be here. I wasn't supposed to go to Princeton. They said my test scores were too low. And she said, I'm certainly not supposed to be standing here with a chance to become the First Lady of the United States of America.
I really should read her biography.
But there she is. And they're, as always, they're trying to raise the bar a little higher. Like they did.
Wait a minute, because there's more coming. I want you to be ready for it, because I don't want you to, like, you know, put a fist through the wall or anything. What's coming is another one of the old racial slurs. The liquored up black woman. So just be ready for it, okay?
When she went to Princeton, and then Harvard, and now possibly the First Lady.
Is it possible she was holding onto the bar as they were raising it?
No, I think she might have made a trip to the bar.
But that's, again, I don't know.
Now, this is a guy who called John Edwards' wife a prostitute. This is a guy who said that he wants to put a bullet between Michael Moore's eyes throttle him to death, strangle him to death with his own bare hands. And this is quality radio. Meanwhile, just by comparison, just so you'll understand, if I go after somebody and not go after, but if I pursue someone to see if I can get them, you know, somebody I think that you'd like to hear from, a liberal, a progressive, a politician maybe, and I ask them to come on the program, you know what I get? Well, what station are you on? Well, ma'am, there's not much freedom of speech on terrestrial radio these days, so you can quit hoping that there's actually a liberal on a radio station somewhere. We are an internet radio network. And then I get, oh, you're only on the internet. Because, you see, terrestrial radio, where Glenn Beck broadcasts, is quality, baby.
I'm not sure.
I don't know what you're saying. I think the bottom line here is that, yes. I think you're trying to deflect from the issues here, is that the campaign is about the kids. You know, we're all coming around, and we're talking about this.
Back in 2007, Glenn Beck said Senator Obama is very white in many ways, and suggested that Hillary Clinton should give Barack Obama 5 percentage points for affirmative action. Had enough? 6 of this? Jesus, Mary, and Joseph. Heartland America listens to Glenn Beck. I think he's broadcast live from Philadelphia or something, doesn't he? You know, those people who aren't elitists. Those people who are happy in their ignorance. How'd you hear that? He said Michelle Obama's drunk. Oh, dang, that's funny. That Glenn Beck, he just tears me up. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob. It's Dave up here in Northern California, up near Oregon.
How are you, Dave?
I heard an amusing little story. If you haven't already heard it, let me know if you have. But it apparently McCain and Obama and Hillary are all traveling on the same plane to some event. And McCain makes the statement, you know, I could throw 10 $1,000 bills out of this plane and make 10 people very happy. And Hillary says, well, you know, I could throw 100 $100 bills out of this plane and make 100 people happy. Obama says, I could throw 1,000 $10 bills out of this plane and make 1,000 people happy. And the two pilots listening in, one said to the other, listen to them. I could throw the three of them out of this plane and make 570 million people happy.
Oh, God.
So you hadn't heard that one.
I have, but it's funny every time I hear it.
Oh. You should have let me know.
No. You know what? That is a rule that I strictly adhere to, Dave. I think one of the single most impolite things you can do is when somebody's telling a joke, you go, "Oh, I heard that," and then he says, yeah, "That's just rude." I mean, that's right up there with talking about somebody's mama. But no, believe me, I get it. Oh, I so get it.
I have to compare that now, but though with yeah, I've heard it, but it's still funny.
Because you know the funniest jokes are the ones that have an element of truth to them.
Yes, indeed, and you know I can relate to this. You know, I do believe we have the three candidates among all of them that is the most have the handout to the big special interest.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
I do think we've got some hope with Obama that he just may have it in his heart to try to act in the best interest of the people, and maybe even some element of Hillary is that way. She will have Bill having some influence, but all of them owned by special interest insurance corporations, all of them accepting big payoffs from war profiteers, Lockheed Martin and such. And it's scary, you know. What are we expecting for the rest of the? You know, our country is going flat ass down a rat hole, and how are we going to stop that? You know, we got to.
Yeah, but see, that's the kind of stuff that you and me and the hoi polloi and the plebs sit around thinking about. You got to remember, Dave, that for the millionaires, life is good. You remember that story I had a couple of weeks ago? The sales of 5-carat diamonds is dramatically up right now. Yachts are up. 600-class Mercedes sales are up. Porsche is doing nicely, thank you very much. So's Ferrari and Lamborghini.
And Bentley and BizJet. Yeah, I'm sure. The very rich see a real value in this, but how many of them vote? You know? If you had all the billionaires...
They don't have to vote. They don't have to vote. They're country club pals with the guys who... dummy up the voting machines, Dave.
Yes, that I believe. That's the most frustrating of it all. Yeah, how we vote has very little to do with it if people decide to go a different route. We're getting some early results in right now from Indiana and North Carolina. I wonder how that's going to reflect it.
North Carolina is going to be solid for Obama, but it looks like he's in trouble in Indiana. Which means that we get another week of election time kabuki theater. Now, what's going to be fun, though, is between now and next week, West Virginia is the only primary on the 13th. That means, you know, you're not... Oh, it's going to be nasty around here for the next week.
What kind of apparatus does one vote on in West Virginia?
Luck of the draw. One certainly does not get a paper ballot.
No.
If one goes to vote in early voting, one gets to vote on a touch screen. But it went county by county by county. And here we have not the touch screens, but the stupid machines with the where you feed the little stupid ballot into the machine and it allegedly counts your vote.
Well, those machines, Bob, were designed to cheat, and cheat they do, you know, and they... The tech folks that now are a product of the Patriot Act, they can invade computers wherever they want. So these.
No, I understand that completely. Please bear in mind that some of the Indiana voting was conducted on machines that have already been decertified, Dave.
Right now, today, I am blocked from copying any email. I am blocked from going on the chat room. I am blocked. The tech just, you know, and much of it has nothing to do with anything. They're just being mean-spirited, and they got the power to do it, so they do it.
Could be. It could be. I got a couple of blinks here, but thanks for calling in, Dave. It's always good to hear from you, my brother.
Thank you, Bob.
You take care now. All right. Bye now. When you're getting down toward the end of the program, you do kind of have to move through calls because I hate to leave people on hold. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Jesus God Almighty, it's Bruce Birch.
Hey, Bob, how you doing, man?
What are you doing?
I am basking in the afterglow of a fairly progressive North Carolina victory for Barack Obama. And I don't know where you stand, Bob, but I got to tell you, I'm glad that at least here, you know, something was decisive.
Yeah, well, it was decisive there, convincingly so.
It looks like to me that that he's going to take at least a 25-point victory here in North Carolina, which is what they're saying probably would happen a few weeks ago. But you know, Hillary and Bill, I mean, Bill has been here in the triad of North Carolina, which is Greensboro, High Point, Winston-Salem area, probably five times in the last 2 to 3 weeks. And
of course, the McCain-Turian candidate was in Winston-Salem today, too, and he thought he was in West Virginia. Did you catch that, Bruce?
No, I didn't catch that. What did he say? I knew he was at Wake Forest.
Yeah, he was at Wake, and he said, I want to thank the students of West Virginia for having me here today.
Oh, my God. And isn't he the same one that can't tell the difference between a Shia and a Sunni?
And you know what? There's a lot. It's a lot the same thing. Shias and Sunnis are a lot like West Virginians and Wake Forest students.
Except, you know, except for the big hole in the ground in West Virginia. He doesn't know what that's all about.
No, that's good for America.
That's good for America. As long as they're digging coal up out the ground, everybody's going to be happy. Go electricity, everything's fine.
Yeah, man. We're going to drink coal sludge. We're going to pour coal sludge on our Wheaties in the morning. Praise God.
Praise Jesus. Excuse me. Did I say Jesus?
Yeah, that's okay.
Anyway, you know, Bob, I've been missing you guys, and I wanted to call in tonight. Nathan, I know I only got a couple
days. We telepathically conjured you.
Well, you did.
I mentioned you in the earlier in the program. I did, honest to God. Yeah. You can check the archive.
I was I worked real late tonight, and I got in and I, you know, I said, well, I'm not going to pay attention to it until about 7:30 because, you know, they always have the blah blah blah, and so I tuned in and I was like, oh my God, I can't believe it. So, but I did want to call in and just let you know that you know, we're still doing some good solid work down here. Doing a lot of stuff on the ground these days. A lot of Democratic Party, building here in my local neighborhood, and just some real basic, back to basic, good old fashioned walk in the streets kind of political action. And I don't know, it's just always the stuff that I love to do.
You know, that's the hardest work, Bruce, but it's also the most satisfying.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when you go to meet your neighbors. And you get to engage in conversation with someone who is a Republican, and yet they're making $25,000 a year, and you say to them, if you're making less than $100,000 a year, you're voting against your own best interest, and you shock the crap out of them. They go, what do you mean? And you get to explain to them how they're getting raped every single day that they wake up and go to work, and they go, you know what, maybe I need to start thinking about it.
Well, yeah, let me share one with you today, because I had one of those little magic moments today. I was in the grocery store, and I was trying to find a bottle of olive oil that would not require me to contact my banker to purchase. And so I'm sitting there, you know, doing math in my head. Okay, 30 cents an ounce. Okay, 25 cents an ounce, you know. And there's this lovely lady standing next to me, and she says, I can't figure out which one I'm going to buy. And, you know... You know me. Don't give me an opening. I will have a conversation.
A truck will drive through.
And I said, "Well, ma'am, is this for cooking purposes, or are you going to make salad? You know, you're going to put it on salads? Because you know, extra virgin olive oil has a real profound flavor, and that's why it's yummy on salads and stuff like that. But it doesn't cook real well because it smokes real easy." And
sure.
And she said, "I'm consecrating with it."
Oh my Lord!
And
you
I said.
Didn't.
Yes, she did.
Consecrating what?
And I said, it has to be olive oil. She said, oh yes, that's that. It was olive oil that consecrated the ancient kings of Israel. And I said, well, what does the? I said, please understand, I'm not being disrespectful. What does the consecrating do? And she said, well, you know, it cleans you up. She said, if you want to fast for a day and get the poisons out of your body, you pray over it and you consecrate yourself with a little bit of oil, and then you do your fast, And it makes it a little bit easier. Or if you know things are going wrong in your world and you know that evil has come into your house, you can take your consecrating oil and you can go and consecrate the things that are around your house.
Oh, my goodness.
And it was...
this woman must go through a lot of oil, Bob. I'm thinking she may want to get...
No, she said her last bottle lasted her 5 years. She said, now the oil got to be consecrated, too. And I was delighted with this conversation because, you know, she wasn't at least in front of me. She wasn't handling any serpents or drinking any strychnine or didn't break into tongues or anything like that. She was very sincere.
Well, that's a believer often is very sincere.
And so, you know, I asked her a little bit more and she said, you know, there are so many things in our world that are evil and there is so much poison around us.
Oh, the truck. Go ahead.
And I said, you know, you're absolutely right. I said, I don't know if they got enough olive oil to consecrate the evil that's going on in West Virginia, ma'am.
Oh.
And she said, what do you mean?
Mm.
And I said.
And Bob continued and went into preaching.
Yeah, you know, testify, brother.
Testifying.
And I said, look it. Every time you turn on a light switch. You're helping blow up mountains here in West Virginia.
That's absolutely right.
Every time you walk out of the room and you leave that light switch on, there's a little bit of evil entering your house because of mountaintop removal. And she looked at me and she said, I do believe you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And because of the coal that we burn that goes into the atmosphere that puts mercury into the atmosphere and it comes back out as rain and it gets into our streams and it gets into our groundwater, I said, do you realize that every woman in America has enough mercury in her body to account for a 10 IQ point loss in every baby that she bears? I said, that's the difference between somebody who is mentally challenged and somebody who's of average intelligence. I said, that's the difference between a genius and someone who's average. And she said, mercy sakes, I'll be praying over this. I'm so glad you told me. I said, pray for me too, sister.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I don't think they open their eyes enough to see exactly what's going on around them. You know, and thank God for people like you, Bob, that you have the eloquence to be able to bring that to the fore. And I wanted to share a bit of news with you, Bob. This is totally non-politically related, okay?
Okay.
All right, can I lay it on you?
Lay it on.
Well, now, you know, when I went off the air way, way back when in the dark ages, and the one of the things that happened in my life was that my... wife and I of 10 years separated and went our separate ways. And since then, I have met a beautiful, absolutely amazing woman who has just become the light of my life in so many different ways. It is truly amazing. Now, that's part of the good news. The second part of the good news is we're expecting a child. And
no.
I'll be a dad again, probably in about a month or so.
Oh, wow. Little boy, little girl, do you know?
You know, we did the ultrasound, and apparently the ultrasound gods did not smile on us that day because the baby was like, not going to do it.
Not going to show ya.
We're not going to. So, you know, we've been buying green and yellow, right? We figure, hey, you know, it's a neutral color. Plus, it's kind of earth tony. But anyway, but I wanted to sort of share that with you guys, and I know that there's a lot of folks who listen to your show, used to listen to mine, and probably would be interested to know the information and just to tell you guys that I love every one of you, man. You do a fantastic job, and I really hope that you can, you know, continue forth.
You are never far from my thoughts, my brother.
Well, know that Bruce is doing well.
Cool.
Bruce is doing well. I'm back doing electrical work with an old company that I worked with years ago, and I've actually sort of risen to a position of middle management. Oh, my God. So I get to be the boss that tells everybody to take long breaks and extra long lunches.
Because you're just that good a guy.
Hell, yeah. You know, hell, you can't get, you know, I mean, hey, this is a non-union state, so you got to get what you can where you can. You know what I mean?
That's right. That's all too true. And, you know, if we get the Employee Free Choice Act with a Democratic president and a Democratic Congress, North Carolina may not be a non-union state much longer.
Exactly, exactly. And you know what? And I can only hope. And that's one of the reasons why I'm, you know, and you know what, Bob? We need to get on. I need to sit down and have a nice long conversation with you at some point in the very near future on the air about the oiliness of the Clinton campaign. But we'll do that at some point.
I think we should. Before you called in, I had made it clear that I'm voting for Obama in our primary, which comes up next week, simply because I had the straw that broke the camel's back today, and that was seeing this Hillary Clinton ad that went out in Indiana, whose cover featured a rifle pointed at Barack Obama's head.
No, it didn't.
Yes, it did.
Oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Hey, let's tell all of the white supremacists in Indiana. Hey, when he shows up, I mean, my God. Well, you know, the thing that did, and I voted last Friday, early voting, because we have that here in North Carolina, where you can vote pretty much any time you want, 2 weeks up to the primary day itself. But I could spend, you know, because I knew I'd be working late today, et cetera. But, you know, the thing that really got me today was looking in the news this afternoon when I got home and found out that that the Clinton campaign had actually suggested buying a superdelegate vote down here. To a superdelegate who was very highly pissed about it and went straight to the newspapers with it. So there should be something that'll come out about that.
Do you buy superdelegate by the pound, by the ounce? You know.
I hope they don't buy her by the pound, because she's a big gal. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's healthy, this particular lady. But she was very upset about it. She even said to the Clinton person who called her, "What are you suggesting buying my vote?" And the response was, "No, of course not." But you know what I'm saying? So we'll see what happens. But you know,
well, don't be a stranger, brother. You don't realize it, but in your absence, we have created a new program.
Uh-oh.
Happens every night from 11 to midnight. Usually it's Peter, me, and John, and it's called the Horn Section.
Oh yeah. Well, maybe I'll call.
And it's always just us. It's not a call-in program or anything.
Oh, it's
as an alum, you have grandfather status.
You can grandfather me in before the rules are created. Is that
right?
Speaking
of which, while we're passing this kind of news around, I'm a grandfather.
Thank God. You know what? Congratulations, Bob. That's fantastic. You're a grandfather. You're too young to be a grandfather.
Yes, I am, and Agnes is way too young to be a grandmother.
Well,
but we are. I am. She is.
You know what?
Something.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, it is. I'm kind of in love with the little tykes.
That's great, man.
Hey, brother, I hate to cut it short, but Peter's on the way with Strictly Confidential. We got to make room for him.
Okay. Well, listen, man. I love you guys. I'll give a listen and get in on you tonight. All right.
We'll be right here.
And have a great couple of hours. Tell Peter, well, Peter, you're listening, I'm sure. Love you, man. And I love all of you guys. And have a great evening.
All right. Take care, Bruce.
Okay.
Later.
Bye.
And that, of course, is our dear buddy, Bruce Birch. It is time for Strictly Confidential, which means it's time for me to get out of here, and I am run up against it. So thank you to everyone. Thank you especially to the bravest, hardest-working people I know, the folks down at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, working every day tirelessly to save not only the Appalachian region from mountaintop removal, but the entire country. You can be a part of the solution by going to crmw.net and joining. Please do so. You will be glad you did. Thank you, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow evening. The broadcast day is far from over. Coming up next, Strictly Confidential with the world's most fabulous LGBT conversation radio host, Peter Godbold. After that, as mentioned, the Horn Section. Might even hear from Brother Bruce. And following that, All Foxed Up with John Fox will round out the broadcast day. Lots of fun coming yet. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 141 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBT version of Conversation Radio, in touch with the LGBT community and our straight allies. Strictly Confidential is found exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network, also brought to you in part by Coal River Mountain Watch. That's crmw.net, Coal River Mountain Watch. Stop by.